Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Just over a week ago, the Albuquerque City Council adopted an ordinance to advance the issue of pay equity, regardless of gender. The city's new ordinance follows on the heels of the state's Fair Pay for Women Act, which became law in 2013, and a previous Albuquerque City ordinance addressing pay equity. Is the new ordinance an effective way to overcome the gender pay gap? Does the ordinance create issues for businesses, small and large, local and national? Does it go far enough? Joining me by phone to discuss the ordinance and the issue of pay equity is Gabriel Campos, director of the City of Albuquerque's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Martha Burke, political psychologist and women's issues expert, author and public radio host who served as the chair of the Albuquerque Women's Pay Equality Task Force. Welcome to both of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. To participate in our program, email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Dr. Martha Burke, if we have a Women's Pay Equality Task Force, there is obviously pay inequality or inequity. What causes pay inequity?
Oh, my goodness. It goes way, way back. I think the earliest roots of pay inequity in the United States, at least, goes back to the time when we had women's jobs and men's jobs. And that was prior to the 1970s. It was legal and very usual for companies to pay women less for the same work men were doing, and blatantly so. You know, they would advertise, if they even accepted women at all for a given job, and they'd say women 10,000 a year, men 15 or whatever. And that was legal. The other thing, though, was a cultural thing. Women's jobs, people viewed that as women don't really need to work. You know, in those days, it was like if women work, there may be something wrong with her family. Well, maybe she's a widow. That's okay for her to work. But generally, women's work was viewed as being for so-called pin money. So it wasn't as important, if you will, as men's jobs. And women's jobs were just viewed as less valuable.
Well, as early as 1963, I believe, nationally, this issue was addressed, was it not?
Well, in 63, the Equal Pay Act passed. And that was largely due to the work of women in unions. Because even in those days, women in unions were paid less than men doing exactly the same job. So the Equal Pay Act passed, and it said that it doesn't say you have to pay women and men the same. This is a problem with our laws that we can get into later. But what it does is prohibit discrimination in pay. There's a very big difference. Because what that does is put the burden on the person who's being discriminated against to bring an action and so forth, whereas if it had what I call an affirmative obligation to pay women and men the same, then the burden would be on the employer. But that's not the case.
Now, how long have you been involved with this issue in New Mexico and in Albuquerque, issue of pay equity?
Well, let me go back to what brought me to it to begin with. I was in Washington, D.C., for 15 years, from 1990 to 2005, and I ran the nation's largest coalition of women's groups and oldest coalition, the National Council of Women's Organizations. We were very involved in the issue. I worked with many members of Congress. I was I was on the board of the National Committee on Pay Equity and helped to craft, actually chaired the nonprofit committee to craft the Federal Fair Pay Act. Now, this is not the 63 Act. This is a later one that unfortunately never passed, nor has the Paycheck Fairness Act, which was crafted at the same time. So I come out of that experience. I came to New Mexico in 2006. I went to work for Bill Richardson in the presidential campaign when he was running. We did get this issue before the national audience. He brought it up a number of times in the presidential debates, which was really good because we wanted all the candidates to address the issue. then when that campaign was over, I went to work for Bill Richardson as a senior advisor for women's issues. And at that time, we crafted a state-level pay equity initiative, which is very, well, it's actually the precursor to the Albuquerque pay equity initiative, although it does not go as far as the Albuquerque initiative simply because the clock ran out. Bill Richardson was term limited. We had a change in administration. The current administration has not pursued the pay equity initiative with the same amount of vigor that the Richardson administration did. It is still in effect, but as I understand it, it's sort of languishing. But anyway, that is my background as to how I came to the issue. So I have quite a long tenure as a pay equity advocate.
Now, before we get to Gabriel Campos and talk specifically about Albuquerque's ordinances, how do Albuquerque and New Mexico compare nationally on the issue of pay equity?
Well, if you look at a list of the states, we're about a third of the way down in terms of pay equity, which is to say our gaps are somewhere in the 18% to 22% range overall between women and men in this state. There are a number of entities, including the U.S. Department of Labor, that try to rank states in terms of what their pay gaps are. But what the folks in Washington tell me, and I do work with the Department of Labor pretty closely on this, is that after you get past the first two or three best states and two or three worst states, everybody else is sort of in that mushy middle. And that's where we are. We're not the worst. We're certainly not the best.
Okay. Gabriel Campos, in addition to the recently adopted pay equity ordinance that will take effect in July, there is an existing pay equity ordinance passed and adopted in November of 2013. Tell us about this existing ordinance, please.
Sure. Good morning.
Good morning.
You, and first, I'd like to thank you for having me on today. So back in 2013, there was the original ordinance, which mimicked to the most part what the state was doing, and that was the requirement that anybody who was going to apply through our competitive bidding process would provide information to us. And they never provide to us specifically what they're paying, but only the deviation between what men and women are paying using an Excel format that's on the city website. So that was what we had initially. The mayor then, thank the mayor and the great task force. I'd like to mention them, if you don't mind. That's Clara Apodaca, Dr. Burke, Jeanette Candelaria, Debbie Stover, and Councillor Gibson. Then we worked on that for the following year, getting the data so that we could come up with the next stage. And that's where we are now, the incentive, so that and businesses can look at their data, and if they qualify, getting 10% or less between the deviation.
All right, let's backtrack just a minute.
Sure.
So the first ordinance really was about information collection?
Yes.
And then did that inform the creation of the second ordinance?
Absolutely. That's what we worked on with the task force for the year that followed.
All right, so let's jump in. What does the newly enacted ordinance do that the 2013 ordinance did not?
Right. So the what existed before still exists, that people, the contractors or the bidders, have to provide the information. But now they're eligible to get a preference, and that preference is based on their data specifying if their weighted average between what they pay men and women is 10% or less. And then with that, they can get a 5% preference in the process.
So explain for us what it means to get a preference for those who aren't in the business of preparing RFPs, requests for
sure.
proposals, and things like that. What does it mean to get a preference?
And I had to do a lot of learning myself because I work in the Office of Diversity and Human Rights. So purchasing is its own entity. But my understanding is, like there's a preference for small business and local business, in the bidding process, that 5% would mean it changes how much. The way it was explained to me, if, for example, you come in at a price of $100, and I'm just using an example.
Sure, sure.
That 5% would mean it really comes in at a price of $95. So that saves you 5% as they're looking at the total number, and if they're looking at a lowest bidder, that would save you there. Is that your understanding too, Dr. Burke?
Yes, it is. So what it does is make you basically 5% more competitive than you would have been without it.
Okay, so now is the same information being requested with the new ordinance as has been requested since the 2013 ordinance?
Absolutely same information.
Is it just being requested at a different time? I know you can get the preference or not get the preference, and is there a certification? But tell us a little bit about that process and what people who are listening, who own businesses, how they can take advantage of this.
That's a fantastic question. So there are two parts to this. The first mandatory part is they will still have to upload the data that they will fill out in that spreadsheet for to be competitive for the bid. It is our recommendation that they do that early, because if they're eligible for a preference, then they have to get that information to my office so that we can provide a certification, and then they would also upload that as well with their bid. So there would be two things if they're eligible for a preference, but one thing only if they're just going to go forward without looking toward the preference.
We're talking today about the issue of pay equity. I'm talking with Gabriel Campos, the director of the city's Albuquerque Office of Diversity and Human Rights, and with Dr. Martha Burke, who served as the chair of the Albuquerque Women's Pay Equity Task Force. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook. Search for KUNM Radio or on Twitter at KUNM News. So let's get some specific examples of existing pay equity, if we can. Dr. Burke, what kinds of jobs reflect the greatest degree of pay inequity here in Albuquerque and New Mexico?
Well, it's the same here in Albuquerque and New Mexico as it is nationwide, actually. And I'm sorry to say it goes up and down the scale. The lower paying jobs, even your lowest tier jobs, unless it's a flat minimum wage, which is the same for women and men. Some employers, unfortunately, here are still paying only the minimum wage. So everybody's making the same on those jobs. But then as you even move a little bit up the ladder, men start to pull ahead, get into management a little bit more. You can go up to lawyers, doctors, professionals. It's pretty much up and down the line, and I will add here that nationwide, and we have no reason to suspect it's any different here in New Mexico, even in female-dominated jobs, such as teaching and nursing, men in those jobs make more.
And you've collected information that demonstrates that.
Absolutely, and so has the Department of Labor for a long time. There are research organizations such as the Institute for Women's Policy Research in Washington, the Southwest Women's Law Center here in Albuquerque, which I might add was instrumental in getting this latest Fair Pay Act passed at the state level. They collect data on New Mexico as well as take advantage of national statistics.
Now, Gabriel Campos, when the city is collecting information, whether it's just simply to collect information or to decide whether there's a preference to be given in bidding, is there a distinction made in particulars about education level or seniority, or what exactly is being measured? If you could describe for us the information that you're seeking and how it's put together to come up with the information you need.
Sure. So in the Excel spreadsheet, it references the 9 categories that you could find on the EEOC website, and you would put in your data based on, for example, if it's an administrative person, a tradesperson, et cetera. Then that information goes into the Excel spreadsheet and comes out with a number that will tell us what the weighted average is.
So is there a space for people to try to differentiate how they pay people based on education or seniority? Or no, you're just looking for an overall wage gap?
Right. So for me, in the discussions that we had with the task force, to go into all those differentiations would have required a lot larger staff than we have. So that's why instead of it being 0%, which is the goal, it's 10% to allow for some of those deviations that an entity may have.
No, so the acceptable pay gap, the maximum that will enable someone to get a preference in the bidding process is 10%.
Correct.
And let me jump in here.
Please.
For now, it is 10%.
Correct.
Because we have to start somewhere. You know, many of our pay gaps we've already seen from the preliminary data collection come as high as 40%.
40%.
Yes. So it's very hard to go from zero to 100 miles an hour if all you have is a jalopy, which is what many of these employers have in terms of do they ever even look at their pay scales. And you'd be surprised at how many of them do not.
All right. We're discussing pay equity and Albuquerque's new pay equity ordinance today. I'm joined by Dr. Martha Burke, who served as the chair of the Albuquerque Women's Pay Equality Task Force, and by Gabriel Campos, director of the City of Albuquerque's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. Join the conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, do you believe Albuquerque's new ordinance is an effective way to address pay equity? We'll be back with your calls and comments and more from our experts after this short break.
8 o'clock Saturday night, May 16th, the New Mexico Philharmonic Concert Series at the Rio Grande Zoo continues with Gershwin, Crazy for You, honoring the big band era. And on Saturday, the 23rd, a musical salute to American heroes, Stars and Stripes Forever, includes winners of the Jackie McGeehee Young Artist Competition. Picnic baskets available. More information at nmphil.org. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Philharmonic.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Susan Campbell, author of 5-Minute Relationship Repair. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how to quickly heal upsets and deepen intimacy.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about pay equity. I'm joined by Dr. Martha Burke, who serves as the chair of the Albuquerque Women's Pay Equality Task Force, and by Gabriel Campos, director of the City of Albuquerque's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. You can join in our conversation. Right now, we'd like to bring Sarah into our conversation. Sarah from Albuquerque, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes. No, I'm in full support of women making more money, obviously. And, you know, in my family, my mother made most all the money to support the entire family, including my dad. Because my father actually had mental illness for many years, and he was not diagnosed. But there's times when the so-called the breadwinner, you know, he can't laid off, he can't find a job, or he could be injured at work, or you know, they get diagnosed by bipolar, or sometimes they have a jail record. You know, they look for a job, but they have this record that's going to be on their, the application for 10 years. So it's the women that have to support the entire family. And so, that's what I just want to bring that up. The whole attitude of, a woman could make less a job because it's a secondary income. Her husband has an income. It's just an addition. That's not really true anymore.
All right, Sarah, thanks so much for your call this morning. We appreciate you joining the discussion. Dr. Burke, do we even want to look at these issues when we're talking about pay equity, or an employer looking at those issues as they go to hire a woman versus a man?
Absolutely, we should, Kathleen. Before I answer, though, the caller, and it's a very valid point, I want to go back to your last remarks with Gabe, and you said, so 10% is an acceptable pay gap. 10% is not an acceptable pay gap between women and men, all other things being equal. I prefer to call it an allowable variance as we get started here.
Okay.
Because it's wrong to say, well, it's okay if women are paid 90%, we're going to take that. No, it's an allowable variance until we get our feet wet here, see where employers are, how soon we can move the bar.
So it's sort of a pragmatic approach to the issue.
It absolutely is, but we're in no way saying that paying women 90% of what we pay men is okay. I just wanted to make that clear. Now, back to the caller's point,
sure.
though. Women are now in 40% of U.S. households, and this is a shocking statistic for many people. In 40% of the households, women are the major or only breadwinner.
So we've had a big change in demographics in this country.
We have had a big demographic change, and the caller's point is very well taken, because so many employers are still looking at women as a secondary worker. She doesn't need as much money. You know, the biggest pay equity lawsuit in history was brought against Walmart a few years ago. And one of the factors in that lawsuit was that many of the Walmart managers were saying, well, we are paying some of the men more, but they're supporting families. And if you just think about that statement, especially for a low-wage worker like a woman at Walmart, many times, yeah, she's supporting the family too, but that was the attitude of the managers, that the men were supporting families, the women were just kind of working for extra money.
And there was a lawsuit. And what was the result of that lawsuit?
Well, the lawsuit, unfortunately, did not prevail, but not because anyone proved that Walmart wasn't discriminating in pay. Basically, the judge said Walmart's too big to be sued in one big lump. So we're going to break this suit up into regional and even smaller lawsuits. So those are going forward. It's been over 10 years in the courts now. It's ridiculous. That does point out to how difficult it is for a woman to bring a lawsuit and how long it takes. Her career could be over before this is settled. So the Walmart case, in a sense, was lost, but it was not lost on the basis of fair pay for women. It was lost on the basis of the judge said, you're just too big to be sued in one big conglomerate.
Now, we did attempt to get a panelist on today who had concerns about, from a business perspective, about the ordinance and about sort of pay equity laws in general and circumstances beyond our control and their control. They had to cancel out. And, for instance, like the Chamber of Commerce here in Albuquerque doesn't have a position on the ordinance, so they weren't going to participate. But I did, in the course of talking with numerous organizations, hear some concerns on the part of, I guess you could say, generally businesses. So, Gabriel Campos, let's look at a couple of those concerns and questions that businesses had. And one of those was, will this ordinance give non-local or larger contractors an edge?
I think it gives anybody an edge who's eligible. Although keep in mind, the preference right now, there are multiple preferences, but it's capped at 10%. So if an entity is already using up to 10%, then this doesn't add anything more. But for those that are under the 10%, this could. But I think it's any entity. I think, as I've heard from the mayor's office and from the mayor, this is the right thing to do. So if a company is doing this, they deserve that.
All right, we're talking about pay equity in Albuquerque's new pay equity ordinance. Join our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Another question, Gabriel Campos, that businesses had was whether this preference will be stacked on top of other preferences.
You can stack. So if I understand correctly, small business gets a 5%, local business gets a 5%. If they were to use those, that would be the maximum because it's stacked at 10%. So it only can go up to 10%.
10% total.
Right.
And then another question was, what is the appeals process? Is there an appeals process if a business comes out at 12% or 11% and they think it's worth their while to come to the city and say, we would like an opportunity to explain things. How is there a process for that?
Well, I think the process would be if they couldn't fill out the information correctly, but the city council has already made the determination 10% is the standard.
Okay, so there's no actual appeals process then?
Only in the sense of maybe they didn't fill the information out correctly. We could help them with that, which is why we're encouraging people to do it early before the RFP is due, which is a good point. So these certifications that our office is going to provide are for a year. So if somebody wants to apply today and preferably not today because we're updating some of the information, but let's say they want to apply next month. That will be good for a full year from that.
So if you if you're a contractor and you think you're going to be availing yourself of this preference to go ahead and get certified early on.
Absolutely. And if they want to do it again because their data has changed, they can do that as well. But we our preference is before the RFP, because once the RFP process begins, that's its very own particular way that purchasing handles things, and our communication severely changes.
Okay. Now, we've heard even President Obama in a past State of the Union address talk about pay equity. And I believe he used the statistic that women on average earn 77 cents on the dollar to what men earn. That's sort of shocking and disheartening statistic. And then to hear you say 40%, what is that statistic actually measuring? Is there more to the story?
That's a good question, Kathleen. It depends on which number they're using. The United States Department of Labor calculates the pay gap for full-time year-round workers. So when, you know, a lot of people will come back and say, yeah, but women work part-time. They don't stay in the labor force and so forth. That number is for full-time year-round workers. And it does lump all jobs together. It's one big kahuna of a number. There is another number, and I wish the Labor Department would actually settle on what they want, because sometimes they measure weekly earnings, and that comes out just a little bit different than the full-time year-round. They'll do full-time weekly, but it's not greatly different. It varies between, say, 18 and 20% pay gap, so it's not a huge difference, but it is confusing. When we say that. So, back to your question, some of the benefits of this new ordinance to business, it is going to help businesses realize if they may have a potential problem. I want to remind the listeners that pay discrimination is against federal law. So with or without this ordinance, it is incumbent on employers to take a look at their pay scales for the same work and make sure that they're paying fairly. Because if they're not, again, with or without this ordinance, they are open to lawsuits by their employees, whether they're women making less or men making less. So the ordinance will help employers take a hard look at, well, how am I paying? You know, have we been paying attention to this? Or is there some unconscious bias operating here in our hiring or promotion policies that are causing one group or the other to fall behind?
We invite you to join in our conversation. If you're a business owner and you do business with the city, will this be a burden to you? Do you consider it an equitable ordinance? If you're a man listening today, do you think this is a necessary ordinance as well? So we'd like to urge you to join in our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, how do you feel about this new ordinance and about the issue of pay equity in general? Well, let's talk about another law that I referenced in my introduction, which is the Fair Pay for Women Act. And Gabriel, I believe you gave me an update about this law when we spoke yesterday, and what's your understanding of where this law is? It was enacted in 2013.
It's my understanding, having attended a training by the State Human Rights Office, that they are charged with the administrative rules and that they were in the process of doing that as well. But they were getting the word out that the law even existed. That was my understanding.
Okay. And Dr. Burke, do you have any other information?
I do. The law does a couple of things, but the main thing that law does is it allows a woman or man who feels that they are being discriminated against in pay to go directly to the courthouse. Prior to that, they had to go through several procedural hoops with the state, with the feds even, For example, if you want to bring a lawsuit under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, a federal law, you have to get permission from the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission in Washington to bring that lawsuit.
What does Title VII cover?
Title VII is a 1964 Civil Rights Act, and it covers discrimination in pay based on race, based on gender, based on religion. Unfortunately, it did not cover sexual orientation. Advocates are working very hard to remedy that.
All right. And so have you heard, has anyone availed themselves of this law yet, or is it too early because there are no regulations yet?
You're speaking of the state law.
Yes.
I don't know of anyone who has availed them. Well, actually, I'm wrong about that. I have been told privately that there are a couple of actions in the pipeline, but they have not been made public yet by the litigants.
Okay. Gabriel Campos, Dr. Burke spoke of the fact that when people actually fill out this spreadsheet, they might gain information about their practices, their internal practices, which might cause a shift in how people are paid. Now, the 2013 ordinance, while it didn't provide a preference, it was information gathering. Have you had an opportunity to talk to any business owners, be they women or men, who've had an aha moment after they've filled out that spreadsheet?
Well, funny you should ask that. I was actually the one who had the aha moment. So in my prior life, before I came to the city, I was working at a nonprofit, and we had received funding from the state. And I was the one who was working out that particular form. And then we had the aha moment because we saw our own statistics. I don't remember them specifically, but I remember going to the executive director and saying, look at what's going on here. Our numbers could be addressed. And the executive director, true to form, said, you know what? We've never looked at it this way. And that's when I started to realize individuals are hired individually. So they're not hired as a group. But when you're forced to look at the data this way, it gives you new insights.
So what actually happened in your organization? Obviously, generally, once the awareness came.
Well, we were more conscious of making sure that the bans, I think they did even a whole new look at how people were hired in. I think a lot of the deviation happens on the negotiation level. Mm. And I've read some different articles that say men and women negotiate differently at that stage when they're entering a job. And I think that could be a factor as to why we get a deviation.
Okay. And Dr. Burke, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I want to add something to that first. Gabriel is absolutely right. Women and men do negotiate differently. The flaw in that, or the fly in that ointment, is this. We have many studies that show if men negotiate pretty hard, they're seen as assertive. You know, this is somebody that's a hard-driving person. We're going to want this person. If women negotiate too hard, they're pushy bitches. And that's well documented in research. So if you say, well, men just negotiate harder, in a sense, that's blaming the victim. If you are hiring someone to do the same job as someone else of the opposite gender, then you ought to be offering that person the same pay. And we do know that coming right out of college, same degree, same job, women are by and large offered 10% less. But I want to get back to the aha moment for
okay,
a minute,
yes.
Because when we did this for the state, and by the way, this information is going to be public. Anything that comes in with an RFP is public information. So if you're an employee, you can look at what your company is putting out there. And that's a matter of accountability to the taxpayers. You know, we need to make sure our tax dollars are spent with companies that pay fairly. But anyway, I got a call when we put this in at the state level from a guy that ran a small janitorial service. He had about 18, 20 employees. Only one was a woman. Well, he actually called me to make sure that he was filling his forms out right. But then I said, well, how do your numbers look? He said, well, I was really surprised. He said, we actually are paying the only woman we have on the payroll quite a bit less, like in the 20% range, than the men. And I said, why is that? And he said, I don't know. I've got to talk to the supervisor that does the hiring. But it could have just been he didn't think about it. Maybe he didn't realize. Maybe he thought it was he didn't have to pay women as much. But he said, I've got to look into it. So a lot of employers don't even really realize till they look at their own numbers.
After he looked into it, did he get back to you?
He did not get back to me, but I think every employer of any size knows that they are open to lawsuits when they have that kind of discrepancy that cannot be accounted for by some of these other factors that we were talking about earlier.
We're talking today about pay equity in Albuquerque's new pay equity ordinance. I'm joined by Dr. Martha Burke, who served as the chair of the Albuquerque Women's Pay Equality Task Force, and by Gabriel Campos, director of the City of Albuquerque's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. There are a number of ways for you to get in touch with us today, and we'd like to hear your pay equity or inequity circumstance or story. You can join in our conversation at 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. You can post your questions and comments. You can email us at callinshow@kunm.org. You can post comments for our panel on Facebook. Search for KUNM Radio or on Twitter at KUNM News. We'll look forward to taking your calls and hearing your questions and comments. We get return after this short break.
Not everybody has an old car or truck sitting around, but our vehicle donation program accepts almost anything with an engine, running or not. We take farm equipment, scooters, motorcycles, RVs, boats, high cube vans, even a big riding mower. It's worth a call to see if your donation qualifies, because you get rid of whatever it is, plus get a tax deduction and a KUNM membership with one simple phone call. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues.
What part of the authorization of the use of military force are we not understanding here?
There is a difference between Al-Qaeda and ISIL, enough of a difference that there needs to be new authorization.
The next topic up for debate, has the president exceeded his constitutional authority by waging war without congressional authorization?
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about pay equity. I'm joined by Gabriel Campos, director of the City of Albuquerque's Office of Diversity and Human Rights, and by Dr. Martha Burke, political psychologist, women's issues expert, author, and public radio host, who served as the chair of the Albuquerque Women's Pay Equality Task Force. If you're an employer, we'd like to hear from you. We've heard some stories about how simply filling out the spreadsheet caused people to become aware of pay inequalities. And have you found them in your business, and how have you addressed them? We'd like to hear from you. Let's go ahead to our caller who's next in line. It's Joseph from Albuquerque. Good morning, Joseph, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I was wondering, you know, sometimes I hear, I don't know if it's true, but that sometimes it's perceived that if you're hiring a woman, especially a young woman out of college, that there's concerns by employers that she might be taking maternity leave if she becomes a mother, et cetera, and some of those things sometimes are a factor. And I'm wondering if it's, what's the status of the Family Leave Act? Are fathers and men allowed to avail themselves of maternity leave and take advantage of the Family Leave Act if they become fathers, for example?
All right, Joseph, and hang on with us in case you end up having a follow-up question, please. Okay. But Dr. Martha Burke has indicated she'd like to address your question.
Joseph, that's a very good question. We, as in the United States, lag behind the entire industrialized world in granting paid leave. We don't have any. The Family and Medical Leave Act covers 12 weeks of unpaid leave. Now, I ask you how many people can afford to take that, men or women, but it does grant it for employers with 50 or more employees. So it leaves out the people that work for very small employers anyway. But, and yes, it is available to men as well as women. Men tend not to take it because the culture, unfortunately, in many companies is that it's a so-called woman's benefit, and you're kind of a sissy man if you take it or whatever. But the bigger issue, Joseph, is we don't have any paid family leave in this country. Maternity and paternity leave, which is a little different from family leave, because family leave covers, like, if you have a sick child
or
elderly parent that needs some kind of help. Family leave covers that. But strictly maternity and paternity leave, it is up to the employer individually. Many of the large companies do grant some, and some of them only maternity, not paternity leave. So we're kind of in a mess as a nation when it comes to that.
Well, thank you. I think that did answer my question. One follow-up. It is the case, though, that if a man or a woman takes advantage of maternity leave, it is law that they cannot lose their job or their position because of that. Is that correct?
It's correct for family and medical leave, which is a federal law, Joseph. Paternity and maternity leave is pretty much up to the employer, but the way that works is this. If an employer grants what they call disability leave, let's say the guy in the executive suite has a heart attack, and they grant him some disability leave and it's job protected, then if they grant maternity leave, it has to be job protected the same way. In other words, you can't say, well, it's okay for the guys at the top to have a heart attack and drop out for 6 or 8 weeks, but it's not okay for women in the clerical pool to do that.
Yeah. So it could be a factor that employers are maybe inadvertently or subconsciously discriminating or using different standards for women if they have this concern that women might be a little more of a liability or an expense for taking these kind of benefits.
Yes,
after they're employed.
Yeah, thanks for coming back to that point. I had skipped over it. You're absolutely right. It's against the law to do that, but they do it anyway. For example, it's really against the law. If you're interviewing for a job and you're a female, well, or a male too, but people don't ask what if he becomes a father. But it is against the law for an employer to say, do you plan to have children? Many women don't know that, but they're not supposed to ask that in an interview because it's sex discrimination up front.
I got asked that question in an interview by another woman. I mean, it's not rare that it happens.
Yeah.
That it occurs. We would like to encourage you to join in our conversation. You can call us at 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. We're talking about pay equity with Dr. Martha Burke and Gabriel Campos today. And Gabriel,
yep.
Before we get any farther, I wanted to give you just a brief opportunity to tell us about the activities of your office.
Thanks.
So we don't leave this program without knowing that, please.
I think this is a perfect opportunity because we're talking about discriminatory practices. So the office, our Office of Diversity, Human Rights, and ADA, is set up to help people in the city, not just city employees, but anybody who encounters any type of discriminatory practice in employment, housing, and accommodation. So in the case of that gentleman, if he knew of somebody who is experiencing that, we like to call up that employer, let them know what the rules are. And in many cases, we've found that people at the higher level don't even know what the lower level is doing. Mm. So that recognition has, in many cases in our office, changed practices. So I just want to put that out there that you can contact us, Office of Diversity and Human Rights. You can Google us. Our number is, just in case anybody wants to call, 768-4712, and we're here for you.
So 768-4712 is the number if you need to get any information or just find out if there's something going on that's not acceptable. You can call Gabriel Campos yes, go ahead.
Or even better,
yes.
311. 311 knows how to get people to us.
That is true. Just ask for the city's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. Now, let's just spend a moment, too, talking about what the city found about its own pay gap when what is the percentage among city workers of a pay inequity between men and women?
Well, actually, we're looking at it again, but when we did the first run, it was about a little over 6%, so under 7%.
All right, and Dr. Burke, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I did, because when we put this in at the state level, the reporting requirement, we did a study of our entire state classified workforce, 17,000 workers. And what we found is our pay gaps were much lower than the national averages. Many of them were under 10%. A lot of them hovered around 10%. But the more surprising thing we found in the state workforce was that more of the pay gaps favored women than favored men. So there are times, and I do want to emphasize it's not the usual, especially in the private workforce, but there are times when men are actually getting shortchanged too. So this is not exclusively about women, but we did our pay gaps at the state level, and that's because public employers tend to put in more safeguards against this at the hiring stage, which Gabriel talked about a little bit earlier. They have systems in place to make sure that employees are slotted into the correct slot to begin with. So it tends to lessen the pay gaps. But we did find that more of them favored women at the state level.
So women actually got paid more than men? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah.
And so the Albuquerque Ordinance says we're looking for pay equity regardless of gender.
Absolutely.
And so it can work either way. Then.
Yeah, you can't say, well, it's okay to pay women more and not okay to pay men more or vice versa for the same work.
All right. I'd like to read a comment that came in from Amber. Amber says, it sounds like we are making progress, but are we? How many women are these companies employing, and what is the margin above the 10%? At the end of the day, the ordinance is intended to benefit the contracted company's profits. Gabriel, is that an accurate statement, the last statement, at the end of the day, the ordinance is intended to benefit the contracted company's profits?
Oh, I think it's a balancing of a lot of different issues. I think the city is looking at getting the best prices. The contractors are looking at getting the work. And our initiative is trying to say, let's look at what you're paying your men and women. So I think it's not as simple as one entity looking at their bottom line. But if that's what brings them to the table to adjust, then that's fine with me.
All right, Dr. Burke?
I would agree with that. I also want to say there's a third entity in here, which is a very big one, and that's the taxpayers. We want to make sure that the taxpayers are getting value for their dollars as well. In other words, they're investing in companies through giving in these contracts, companies that pay fairly. And that's a big factor.
Now, Amber's first question was, it sounds like we are making progress, but are we?
Not very fast. And that's why we put in this this initiative, because the mayor, the council, certainly women and men out there who are not being paid fairly, it's not moving fast enough. This pay gap at the national level has not budged in over a decade. So to say we're making progress, it depends on what you call progress. But to me, we need initiatives like this to move the needle, because it has not been moving.
And Gabriel, Amber also asked, how many women are these companies, I assume companies who are applying with the city, how many women are these companies employing, and what is the margin above 10%? Now let's get clear. Companies who employ fewer than 10 employees, are they exempt?
No.
No.
No, they're not.
Okay.
They are at the state level.
Okay, but not at the city level. So what are you finding? What is the margin above 10%?
Well, we're going to find out. This is the new initiative. So before that, we were getting the data, but now we're going to actually see what's going on.
Okay. All right. And just a quick question from Megan, and Gabriel, I'll address this to you. Megan writes, a friend who is pretty high level in the financial services industry has had several employers ask her this year, as she is interviewed, about her age. Isn't this illegal?
Yes. Under federal law, it's 40 and above, but when that, you have to wonder, why is that question even being asked? Because in my view, we are running into a discriminatory practice.
And so can she contact you for additional information?
Absolutely. Please do. And people can call us anonymously and let us know, because we go right to the heads of the HR. We don't necessarily need to know a person's name. We want to let them know what we're hearing. And that way it kind of protects the individual as well, because we don't want them to be targeted.
So you can Google the city's Office of Diversity and Human Rights, or you can go right to 311,
sure,
dial it, and be connected. Dr. Burke, briefly?
Yeah, on that issue of privacy, I need to emphasize, as Gabriel mentioned earlier, no one's individual salary is reported in this initiative. It is an aggregate number. Here's what we pay women. Here's what we pay men by job category.
I just want to read this comment from Kristen, and then we're going to get quickly to Travis here on the phone. But Kristen writes, I was recently involved in working on a state-level RFP where our over 30% company-wide gender wage gap was revealed. After seeing the chart, I addressed my concerns with the CEO, who essentially denied there was any issue. This was then brought up as a negative factor for me in an employee review and became a factor in my eventual leaving of my position. So the stakes can be quite high.
Stakes can be high. That's called retaliation. It's against federal law.
All right. Let's go ahead. And so, Kristen out there, Kirsten, I apologize. Certainly contact Gabriel Campos at the city's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. Travis, if you have a brief comment, we'd like to bring you in.
I do. It's actually just a quick question, and thank you for this important discussion. How does this law affect my ability to offer competitive compensation to a highly qualified candidate? So if I have a specialized field and I have maybe multiple job openings and a plethora of candidates, some more qualified than others, I may want to offer a higher compensation rate to the more qualified candidate, regardless of gender. And does this law impact my ability to do that? And if so, how?
Okay, Travis, thanks for joining us. And Dr. Burke?
No, it does not affect your ability to offer any salary you feel like based on qualifications. This is aimed at strictly, you know, in your thinking or any employer's thinking, well, it's a woman, it's a secondary breadwinner, I don't have to pay her more, or opposite for men.
And Gabriel Campos, would you like to add anything to that?
He had the answer in his question, regardless of gender. If that's what's happening, then statistically, there are just as many qualified women for that position as there are men.
Okay, and Gabriel Campos, we want to emphasize that you are at the city's Albuquerque's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. People can find you online. They can also find you by dialing 311 and asking to be connected to the office. Dr. Martha Burke, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I'd like to leave the listeners with this. The city of Albuquerque is taking the initiative here. This is the first in the nation, the first in the nation at the city level. And I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to have the guy at the top or the gal at the top, in this case Mayor Berry, behind such an initiative and our city council, because leadership has to go first.
All right. And you say this can be revisited over time. The amount can be shrunk in terms of percentage of what's acceptable.
It not only can, it will be revisited.
It will
absolutely
be. Okay. Well, thanks to our guest today, Dr. Martha Burke, chair of Albuquerque's Women's Pay Equality Task Force, and Gabriel Campos, director of the city's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. You can find a podcast of this and other KUNM call-in shows online at KUNM.org. Jefferson White engineered the show today. Kaveh Movahed is our assistant producer. Michael Hess handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This is the KUNM call-in show on 89.9 KUNM, broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico.